Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic, joins us each week. He follows a lot of trends in the economy and cities and entertainment. And as we close out 2018, we wanted to check in with him to look at what stood out about this year. Derek joins us now. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. And you have brought us some Christmas presents, which is you have come up with some trends that you've been watching this last year. And I will let you start wherever you want.
Yes, everybody's favorite Christmas present, trends. Merry Christmas to us all. So let's start with transportation. I've been really, really excited about the story of self-driving cars. And for a long time, it seemed clear to experts that self-driving cars were an inevitability that would probably arrive on American streets sometime in 2020, 2021. And what I've seen from the last 12 months is that I think we're going to have to push back that time horizon. Mm. I think that self-driving cars are going to turn out to be a lot more difficult to get on the road than we thought. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is that there's the technology problem, which is that it's really, really difficult, it turns out, to build a car that knows exactly how to drive itself in every circumstance, particularly because the roads in American cities, certainly in other large cities throughout the world, aren't simple grids. You're trying to anticipate not only other drivers, but pedestrians. You're driving around detours. You're driving around potholes. And then on the consumer side, I think there's also a bit of a barrier. So Waymo, for example, which is Google's self-driving car division, recently rolled out an option to allow people to take Waymo, which is a self-driving car rides, as if they were taxis. And the uptake on that has been really slow. It might turn out that consumers, don't trust the technology yet. So there's a kind of chicken and egg problem that exists right now with self-driving cars, and I can see this taking a lot longer. So if you like steering wheels, if you like holding them and pushing your foot on the pedal, well, the good news for you is that I think that's going to be the way that we drive cars for the foreseeable future.
I remember doing a story about escalators once, and one of the things that I took away from it is that they can't make them go too fast because people will be scared to get on them. And I think maybe we're dealing with the same thing with self-driving cars, is that people are still a little scared of the technology, even if the proponents of self-driving cars at this point say that it's safer to have a computer driving the car than a person.
Right. And full disclosure, I've been out to Mountain View. I've been in a Waymo self-driving car. I was driven around California for a few minutes in a self-driving car, and I would report to you that a self-driving car drives a little bit like my grandmother, and which is to say, people don't really know my grandmother, so maybe that's not a lot of information, but she drives very cautiously. These are very, very cautiously driven cars, and I think that they're cautiously driven precisely for the point that you're making. No one wants to step into a self-driving Lamborghini in 2020 and suddenly be accelerated to 90 miles an hour. That feels like a death machine. So I think that Waymo is going about this in a smart way. I just think that the tech is hard, and I think that turning even good tech into a successful consumer product is a different psychological challenge that's going to have to be overcome.
Okay, so that's trend number one, maybe on hold for now. What's trend number two from Derek Thompson?
Trend number two is in economics. I think for the last few years, really since the Great Recession started, the big story has been that the stock market was doing much better than the labor market. First, the labor market wasn't doing well because we had a jobless recovery. Then we started creating jobs, but the jobs were coming too slowly. Then unemployment finally fell under 5%, under 4%, which is where it is right now. But wage growth was slow. So you've had this long story, which is stock market over labor market. But this year, 2018, seems to be the first time in the last decade, maybe the first time in the entire century, that the labor market is clearly healthier than the stock market, which is a really rare reversal, considering that one of the big narratives of the last 30 years has been income inequality. It's been that people who earn a wage are getting rich slower than those who own capital because the stock market has constantly overtaken the labor market. So what I'm interested in is what the Fed does, what the Federal Reserve does, because in a way you can imagine the Federal Reserve raising interest rates in order to sort of clamp down on inflation, make make sure that the economy doesn't heat up. But I hope that doesn't happen. I want the labor market to have a little bit of running room. So it is my hope that 2019 will be as fruitful for wages and unemployment as 2018 was, even as I also wish the stock market picks itself up off the ground in the next few months.
Okay, so that's the economic trend you're watching. I know that you also spend a lot of time looking at the world of entertainment. What have you got there?
The big story that I'm paying attention to in entertainment is the movie theater doomed? So first, I was looking at the possible doom of the movie theater when I was writing about Disney. Disney is going to launch a streaming platform in 2019 called Disney Plus. If it really wants to bulk it up, what it should probably do is withhold some movies that might go into movie theaters and put them exclusively on the streaming platform. So if, for example, you're a family that really, really wants to see, like, Black Panther 3, then how valuable would it be if Disney essentially said the only way that you can watch Black Panther 3 is if you subscribe to Disney Plus, the Disney version of Netflix? I think that is the strategy that would make it most successful. But the new reason why I'm a little bit more concerned about movie theaters has to do with Netflix. It released this film, Roma, released on Netflix and in theaters from the Mexican director Alfonso Cuarón. Roma is in many ways considered a front runner for the Oscar for Best Picture, but I can watch it right now on Netflix for no extra cost. I can download it and take it onto the airplane with me.
¿Qué tienes? ¿Querías hablar conmigo? ¿Está bien tu mamá? Sí.
In a world where Netflix and Disney see the movie theater as either optional or even as a detriment to getting people to sign up for their core streaming products, that is a future where the value of the movie theater declines and the cultural iconography of the movie theater declines as well.
I will say that most of the great entertainment that I am watching these days is on streaming or is on television, not at the movie theater.
The average number of tickets bought per person in the United States right now is about 4. In the 1950s, it was about 25.
Wow.
It hasn't really changed that much in the last few years, and that's because in many ways, movies have already declined as the cultural totem of American visual entertainment.
Derek, most of the big, huge life changers over the last couple decades have come in the world of tech, whether it be the iPhone or any number of different products that have come out and really just changed the way that everything happens. What are you seeing in the tech world?
What I'm seeing is not good. There is an acronym, FAANG. F-A-A-N-G, that some analysts and investors use to sort of sum up the most valuable and exciting tech companies.
This is Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google.
That is exactly it. All of them, you could argue, have had a bad 2018. Facebook, it almost goes without saying, has had an absolute horrible year on the privacy side, on the fake news side. But then look at Apple and Amazon. Apple is starting to see smartphone sales flatline for the first time since the iPhone was debuted. And Amazon went through a pretty bad news cycle when HQ2 came out and they chose Washington, D.C. and New York, not the kind of cities that a lot of people were thinking they were doing this entire sweepstakes for. You look at Netflix. Netflix has not had a great year. Revenue is not growing. And now an enormous competitor is coming into the market in 2019 with Disney Plus. And then Google, you could say, is probably survived this maelstrom better than any other company. But at the same time, it's also had some difficulties. There's a lot of controversy, for example, about the YouTube algorithm that allows people, young kids especially, to log online and start watching some videos. And then some of the suggested videos that come up on the right-hand side of their screen might include alt-right videos, might include neo-Nazi videos. So they are starting to have the same problems that Facebook has had, which is, as a theoretically nonpartisan platform, how do you determine what kind of content is allowed to be on that platform and what kind of content is not allowed to be on that platform? That's a political decision, but these companies don't want to be seen as making political decisions, and that makes it a conundrum. So all of the FAANGs, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, you could argue that all of them have had relatively rough 2018s.
That is Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic, who joins us every week here on Here and Now. Derek, thanks for a great 2018. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Don't forget to gift wrap your own trends when you deliver them to friends and family.
Okay.